This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The campaign clock is down to the last few hours. This is the last day to shake hands, knock on doors, and visit greasy spoons before Americans head to the polls. It's been a long and decidedly nasty campaign that could end 12 years of Republican control in Congress, which would mean that Democrats would control the agenda in one or both houses, name the chairs of powerful committees, decide which bills come up for votes and when, call witnesses to appear at hearings, and hold the power to subpoena those reluctant to testify. Control of the House and the Senate has, and still does, hinge on just a few close races, and while opinion polls continue to favor the Democrats, some new ones show Republicans gaining ground. Both parties have deployed battalions of volunteers to get their supporters out to vote, and they're emptying campaign coffers to buy even more ads on television tonight. Today we talked to political junkie Ken Rudin one last time before Election Day, and we'll check in with public radio reporters in the trenches covering races around the country. Later on, the Talk of the Nation opinion page and an argument that the 2008 election may bring us virtual campaigns and e-gerrymandering. We'll explain later in the program. But first, one last look at the midterm elections. What are your questions about the close races? If you're an undecided voter, what issues are you mulling? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And with us now is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, who's got a new edition of his Political Junkie column out on our website today, npr.org. Nice to have you back in the studio.
Thanks, Neil.
And latest polls seem to show, most of them, tightening.
Well, some do and some don't. The CNN poll actually has Democratic support increasing and a double-digit 20-point lead over likely voters of Democrats over Republicans, whereas the Pew poll, Gallup, other polls like that have it narrowing. I think Pew has it within 4 points. So the polls seem to be all over the place, although more seem to be indicating a tightening, at least good news for the Republicans.
And that tends to be the way elections mostly go, except when they don't.
Well, I would kind of think that at the end, you know, given the fact that this has not been a good year for the Republican Party, certainly with the war in Iraq and President Bush's stewardship of it, I would think that undecided voters may at the end say, look, you know, let's try something new. We've seen what it's been like the last 2, 4, or 6 years, going back to the beginning of the Bush administration. Maybe it's time for something different.
And you see the president, for example, who's been out on the campaign trail, campaigning in some unusual places for a Republican president a couple of days before
it was
election.
Very bizarre to me to see the president of the United States campaigning in places like Kansas. Jim Ryan of Kansas in the 2nd Congressional District may have a tough fight on his hands, but the fact that the president was also in Nebraska, western Nebraska, which hasn't elected a Democratic congressman since 1958, it was surprising to me to see the president in such red states like Kansas and Nebraska, which makes me think that maybe the Republicans are in worse shape than we thought.
And the president today down in Florida and the Republican candidate for governor there, Charlie Crist, decided he wouldn't appear with the president.
That's one thing for having the president of the United States come and raise money for you, and that's very good. But being seen with an unpopular president 2 or 3 days before the election may be the kiss of death.
Mm-hmm. There is also concern. We mentioned Iraq, obviously. Saddam Hussein sentenced to die yesterday after the conclusion of one of his trials. There will be many more, but sentenced to hang yesterday. Is that going to affect things, do you think?
Well, Republicans certainly hope so, and maybe the Republicans are pointing out that may be part of the tightening of the races. But you know, when Saddam's sons were captured, when Saddam was captured, everybody thought that this would be a change in Republican fortunes, election fortunes, and it doesn't seem to happen. I think for the most part, most minds are made up. They know that how they feel about the war. They know how they feel about the president. And I think that last minute blips, be it Saddam Hussein's conviction, be it John Kerry's, you know, foaming at the mouth, something strange that comes at the end, I don't think it changes that many votes.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about some of the individual races. We'll talk about the United States Senate for the number to remember there is 6. If Democrats can gain 6 seats in the Senate, they would take control of the United States Senate. And it's really down to just a few states where it's truly competitive. And one state that had thought to be safely in Democratic hands was Montana.
Well, I don't know about safely, but certainly Conrad Burns, who's the lawmaker who's taken the Republican lawmaker who has taken more money from Jack Abramoff, the convicted lobbyist, than any other member of Congress, was certainly trailing the Democratic nominee John Tester. But latest polls show that the Republicans have been hammering Tester as a taxer and spender who will, who'll raise your taxes, and it seems to have made a difference. I'm not convinced that Burns hangs on. There has been a Democratic trend in Montana. Tester has been a pretty good candidate. But again, that race has certainly narrowed. And so also fascinating the other way is Virginia, the fact that that may be dead even. This was a George Allen gimme for the longest time. Then, things that he said, the missteps that he made it much closer. But he has not been able, apparently, to regain his footing. And it's really, really close going into the final days.
And New Jersey, which, again, some thought might be a Republican opportunity to take away a Democratic seat, that also looks like it's at least according to the opinion polls, going to stay in Democratic hands.
In a normal year, Tom Kaine Jr. would have a very good chance of winning the seat, even though it's been over 30 years since the Republicans won a Senate seat in New Jersey. But the fact is, Bob Menendez, the appointed Democratic incumbent, has much more money. But most important, he has the issue of Iraq. Iraq is extremely unpopular everywhere in the country, especially in New Jersey, and it's helping Menendez.
We're going to check in on one of those key Senate races now. Joining us is Steve Kraske. He hosts the program Up to Date on member station KCUR and covers politics for the Kansas City Star. And he joins us now from a restaurant called Etcetera in Kansas City. Nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me again.
And this is one of the closest Senate races in the country there in Missouri.
Neil, absolutely breathtaking. It's been close really throughout the entire race. A year ago, the race was deadlocked. And as we head into the final days of this campaign, it's every bit as close as it was even 12 months ago.
And I know you've been talking with some of the patrons there at Etcetera. This is perfect for you, Ken. What are they saying about this election?
Well, it's interesting. I'm talking to two independent voters here at Etcetera. And one of them, Margaret Reed, she's a waitress here. Not a waitress here, but waitress in a different establishment. And she was saying that the minimum wage is very important to her. It wouldn't affect her waitressing wages directly, but Claire McCaskill, the Democrat in this Senate race, is very much four square behind the minimum wage, and that's important to Margaret. Jim Talent, the Republican, never really said where he stands on this issue. Another voter here, Gloria Ewell, also an independent voter, she was saying that using the word change quite a bit, as you're hearing Democrats say the word change quite a bit in the weekend news shows, that she wants to see a different direction in Iraq and hopes to see a different type of U.S. Senate that'll give this country a different direction there.
And I just wanted to bring Ken Rudin in here. The previous election 2 years ago, Republicans thought that putting the question of gay marriage on the ballot in a lot of states would bring out their supporters. Democrats hope this time by putting issues like minimum wage and stem cell research on the ballot in some states, they might do the same with their base.
Right, and Missouri is a perfect example for that because, as Steve knows, the stem cell research issue on the ballot, Claire McCaskill, the Democratic nominee, has been four square for it from day one, and Jim Talent has waffled on it a little bit. Ultimately, he came out against it, but there seems to be some kind of hesitation in his dealing with that issue.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, Steve Kraske, both sides trying to motivate their base supporters to get out and cast their ballots tomorrow. Are they splitting left and right here?
It's not clear yet exactly how they're going to split, Neil, in a race this close. The polls don't pick up these sliver changes in a race like this. But just to jump off of what Ken was just saying, you hear the phrase stem cell research almost as often in Missouri these days as you hear about the war in Iraq, that voters are very much in tune with where McCaskill and Talent stand on stem cells. And that's a pivotal issue in this state because, as Ken just said, it is a constitutional amendment ballot initiative that's gotten just huge attention here. As much money spent in advertising on stem cell research in Missouri as on the candidates for the U.S. Senate themselves. Just absolutely amazing campaign.
And I suspect almost everybody, perhaps only owners of television stations, would disagree with the idea that they would like to stop seeing all this advertising.
And you hear people complaining all the time about that. I was speaking with an undecided voter on Saturday for a poll at the Kansas City Star, and this woman was saying that her grandson sees the campaign ads coming on TV and says, oh, Grandma, look out, we're going to start arguing again.
Okay. Any predictions there on the McCaskill talent race?
Well, obviously, it's still very close, the race within the margin of error, but this morning the Gallup organization has a poll out, has McCaskill ahead 49-45. We're seeing a slight trend here, Neil. Most of the polls now swaying in McCaskill's favor, although they remain well within the margin of error.
All right. Thanks very much, Steve. Appreciate your time.
Glad to do it.
Steve Kraske, a political correspondent for the Kansas City Star and host of the program Up to Date on member station KCUR. And he joined us by phone from a diner in Kansas City. Let's see if we get a caller on the line. What races are you caring about? What questions do you have of them? If you're independent, what issues do you care about? We'll go to Teresa. Teresa calling us from Norfolk, Virginia.
Hey, my thing is I care. I'm an independent voter, and I really care the most about this election. I will definitely vote for Jim Webb, just because I think that Allen is too closely aligned with the president and the war. But as well, I think that Allen really has some major race issues, and that's very bothersome to me. But what's more important that I don't understand is why there's been so much concentration on the president in a congressional elections when the leadership of the Congress has, you know, things like the Mark Foley incident, and nobody really says anything about that, and Tom DeLay, and they don't say anything about that. But then they're concentrating on comments that John Kerry made and, you know, who the president is and isn't supporting. It would seem to me they need to really be careful with especially the Mark Foley incident, because according to the way I read the law, that could even be child abuse. And I think they really need to look at those kinds of issues.
Just to clarify, Jim Webb, the Democrat there, and George Allen, the incumbent Republican. Get a response, Ken Rudin, in 20 seconds?
Well, the Republicans want to change the subject. Obviously, the Mark Foley thing has hurt them. It certainly hurt the Republican leadership. Some members of Congress, like Deborah Price in Ohio, Tom Reynolds of New York, they may go down to defeat because of that. And obviously, changing the subject is what they want to do, certainly with things like John Kerry.
Teresa, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. We're talking with Ken Rudin about tomorrow's midterm elections after the break. An update from Arizona, Tennessee, and yes, from where you live, if you'll give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. This is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're in the home stretch before tomorrow's midterm election. We're taking one last look at key races around the country. In his new Political Junkie column, Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, makes his final calls for the most competitive Senate, gubernatorial, and key House races. You can read them, if you can stand them, at npr.org. It's our homepage. Ken Rudin is here with us, of course, in Studio 3A. And we got an email last week. Ken, why am I so abusive to you? Because we're good friends.
Why do you guys bicker all the time?
Yeah. Of course, you're invited to join the conversation. If you're still undecided, what issues are you voted on? If you have questions about the close races, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Paul in the Mohawk Valley of New York wrote us on email to ask, what do you see in New York's 24th congressional district? This has been, he comments, a very dirty race.
Is the 24th, I'm assuming, well, first of all, this is a historic low point for the Republican Party in New York. You know, George Pataki was governor. His governor has been, will leave the seat, leave it after 12 years. Hillary Clinton overwhelmingly will win re-election in the Senate. Elliot Spitzer, the Democrat, overwhelmingly win re-election.
Mm-hmm.
And this is affecting Republicans down the ballot, especially upstate New York.
Alan Hevesy, who's running, maybe in some trouble since he's been thrown over the side
the
by
state
his
controller, right?
But, yeah.
but if he wins, the Democrat, this will be the first time since 1938 where Democrats have won every state office in New York. That's how good the Democrats look in New York right now. Now, upstate New York, there are a bunch of races where Republicans are running scared. Sue Kelly, just north of the New York City line, the seat that Hamilton Fish used to have, she's in a tough race.
They call Westchester upstate because we're from New York.
Well, that's right. I grew up in the Bronx. Yonkers was upstate New York for me, right? But there's there are three races. There are three seats that I think the Democrats are going to pick up, and one of them is John Sweeney, who represents the eastern tier of New York, going up the Connecticut, Massachusetts border. Mm-hmm. He's in a tough race, and I think he goes down to defeat in the 24th, which the email talks about. It's the open seat that Sherry Bowler is giving up, a liberal Republican. I think the Democrats take that seat too, and I even think the Democrats have a good shot at beating Tom Reynolds in Buffalo. Tom Reynolds is the chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee. If any, he's one of the few people who may be affected by the Mark Foley scandal, in that he, you know, either he knew about Mark Foley in advance and didn't tell the leadership, or he knew it and just tried to cover it up. But the point is, as a part of the leadership, he may pay the brunt of the blame. Say that one time fast. And Reynolds may be one of those guys in the leadership who may suffer the consequences.
Let's get Sarah on the line. Sarah with us from Concord, New Hampshire.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just was wondering, I'm calling from Concord, New Hampshire, and I am an independent voter planning on voting for Paul Hodes for Congress versus Charlie Bass. And
Charlie Bass, the Republican incumbent.
Correct. And I'm just wondering if you could comment on the race here in New Hampshire. It's a very, very tight race, and I just wanted to know your thoughts. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is another good example of what's happened to the Republican Party. 2 years ago, Bass beat Hodes by 20 points. And the list this year, the last time I looked at a poll, Hodes had a 5-point lead in the polls. My gut tells me that Bass holds on, but again, New Hampshire has become a more and more trending Democrat. You have a very popular Democratic governor, John Lynch, who will win overwhelmingly tomorrow. Really, Bass is considered pretty vulnerable, and he's not an ideologue. He's not an ultra conservative. He's a mainstream Republican, but maybe that's not good enough to survive in the Northeast anymore.
Mm-hmm. He just tends to vote with the president, you know, at every turn. And I think that's probably his biggest downfall, unfortunately.
That's going to be a tough race, a close race.
Thanks for the call, Sarah.
Yep, bye-bye.
Ted Robbins is our correspondent based in Arizona, where he's been following that state's closest races. And Ted joins us now from NPR's office in Tucson. Nice to have you on the program, Ted.
Hi, Neil. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Ted.
And let's start with the Arizona 8, which covers parts of Tucson and a swath of the Arizona-Mexico border. The conservative Republican candidate Randy Graff has been running on a tough anti-immigration platform, but he's also been trailing in the polls. What are you hearing from people on the ground there?
Well, and I am smack dab in the center of that district right now. If the stars aligned, Randy Graff could win, and mainly because his supporters are, I mean, the saying is that they would crawl on glass to vote for him. They're his core voters on that one particular issue. Mm-hmm. But his opponent, Gabrielle Giffords, is a fairly moderate Democrat, and this is a fairly moderate district. And all the polls show her up about 10%. And 10 points, rather. Mm-hmm. And I think she's going to take the district. And you, basically what you hear around here is that Graff is either a one-issue candidate, which is exactly how his opponent wanted to paint her, or paint him the other way around. I'm getting my genders mixed. Or you just basically hear that he's too conservative for the district.
Hmm. There's also
so in other words, the race was decided in the Republican primary.
Where Ken, I remember you reporting there was a Republican candidate who people thought could win in the general, but it turned out he could not win the Republican primary.
Right, and I don't think we've pointed this out, that this is a Republican district where Jim Colby, who is retiring, refuses to endorse the Republican candidate. Right, Ted?
Yep, it's about 39% Republican, 34% Democrat. So it's a sort of a classic swing district, and 27% independent. So Jim Colby has almost always, and let's not stop now, identified as the only openly gay Republican in Congress, and he may in fact be retiring just so he doesn't have to hear that anymore. But he has said that basically his party and Congress have just become too contentious.
Randy Graff may be, as his opponent would like to characterize him, a one-issue candidate, yet that issue is on the ballot, several propositions on immigration on the ballot there in Arizona.
And they'll be decided, I suspect, in the Phoenix area, where the majority of voters are. And those are to deny bail to illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants who are accused of serious crime, to deny punitive damages to any undocumented immigrant who brings civil suit, to deny in-state tuition to any undocumented immigrants who are residents, and to make English the official and only language on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And the only one of those that seems to be even close is the in-state tuition.
And
the rest are winning handily.
The rest are winning handily.
Yep.
Aha. So this looks like that's going to be a decisive vote there.
There has been really very little debate on it. It's fascinating. I mean, there has been virtually no money spent on it, and it's way lower profile than 4 years ago, 2 years ago, rather, when the Proposition 200 to deny certain benefits to illegal immigrants passed about 54 to 46.
Hmm. There was a time when Democrats thought John Kyle, the Republican incumbent senator in Arizona, might be vulnerable. How is that looking?
The polls that I see have Kyle up anywhere from 5 to 13 points. And I think, well, now, Jim Peterson, who is a real estate developer and former head of the state Democratic Party, is running against Kyle. And I think if he has any chance at all, it's because people are voting against John Kyle, not for Jim Peterson. Peterson has... he's not what you'd call the most dynamic campaigner. He's brought in Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, anybody he could, all the big Democratic guns. And he has spent $8 to $10 million of his own money on the race. And basically, they both spent the same. They both have the same amount of money, about $12 million. The difference is Jim Peterson has money. John Kyle has friends with money. Hmm. But it looks like, if I were to go with my gut, and I think Ken probably agrees, I don't think John Kyle's going to lose this race.
Ken?
Yeah, I agree. But it's interesting. I'm interested to think of what Arizona, we used to picture it as a Goldwater state, Goldwater country. But certainly Arizona's not like that anymore, is it?
No. In fact, as I said, between a quarter and a third of the voters in the state are independent, and they make no bones about voting whatever way on who, whatever issue or whatever candidate. I mean, they can switch all over the place. So you don't see a lot of straight ticket voting as you used to, straight red.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks very much, Ted.
My pleasure.
Have a good time tomorrow.
Yeah, I will.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Let's get another caller on the line.
Ted really has a sense of humor.
thank you
very much.
Let's go to Catherine. Catherine's with us from Palo Alto in California.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Interesting comment about the straight ticket voting. I'm concerned about a new sort of dirty politics that seems to be showing up, that a mailer arrived for us looking like it was recommending votes for the Democratic Party, and it looked like it came from the Democratic Party, but when you looked at it, there were a couple of key issues that didn't quite make sense in terms of a Democratic ticket, and it recommended voting for a Republican incumbent in one race.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that it isn't from the Democratic Party, it's from some consulting group making it look like this. And I'm wondering if you're seeing this sort of thing in other races.
There have been complaints about there are complaints, Ken, about automated phone calls being made on behalf of Republican candidates, but sort of disguised as a Democratic campaign ad.
This is what happens at the last few hours of a campaign when, one, the media, it's too late for the media to do real investigation on it, and two, when you have so much money that you don't know where to pump it in, you can't, all the TV time is already bought, but there are a lot of little dirty tricks that both parties will do, and we've seen it. We've seen it with ballot integrity programs. We said that, you know, we've seen it in New Jersey, we've seen it in Louisiana, we've seen it in California. There's a congressional candidate who was sending out notices to possible people with Hispanic surnames, saying that you may be arrested if you show up at the polls. It's the kind of thing, regrettably, that you see in the final hours of a campaign when it's almost too late to be noticed, nationally by the media.
Hmm. Thanks, Catherine.
Sure.
Here's an email from Richard in Phoenix. Bush made a campaign stop in my hometown, Elko, Nevada, where he spoke to the conservative crowd from a podium set up near Air Force One. Elko is a town of about 19,000 people, but firmly Republican. Bush was stumping for Jim Gibbons, who's having his problems all his own, but the cow counties of Nevada may push him over the top. And do you agree with that? This, of course, in the governor's race there in Nevada.
Well, actually, I think the Democrats are going to take the governorship in Nevada, even though Jim Gibbons is up in the polls. He's been hounded by gets some terrible, terrible publicity. Not the least of which is the fact that he was accused of propositioning a woman in a garage for sex. The married Jim Gibbons denies it. He said he was just trying to help her. He wasn't trying to do anything to her. But a 911 call was made. Republicans are in trouble there. And that's we talk about historically Republican areas of Nevada, and that's true. But you have Jim Gibbons' House seat, which he's giving up, which is hotly contested. You have John Porter, the Republican congressman in the 3rd District, hotly contested. And the Republican Party has never been crazy about Jim Gibbons running for governor, too. The departing Republican governor, Kenny Guinn, plainly doesn't like him. I think the Democrats are going to pick up that seat.
Mm-hmm. And here's a note that Richard adds on his email. As a side note, the last Republican president to stop in Elko and speak was Herbert Hoover in his 1932 bid for reelection. And he also notes it didn't help much. So. We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin. You can read his latest column, the last one before Election Day, at npr.org. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's another email, this from Alvin in Tennessee. Please comment on the Ford Corker contest in Tennessee. A gay marriage amendment is also on the ballot there. Well, let's go to NPR's Audie Cornish, who's been following that much-watched Senate race, joining us from Nashville, Tennessee. Nice to have you on the program.
Hello, Neil.
Democratic candidate Harold Ford has been trailing of late in the polls.
He has been. The polls have gone all over the place over the last few months, but they've always been very close. And right now, in the last few weeks, they've been trending Republican towards former Chattanooga mayor Bob Corker, who's up maybe an average of almost 7 or 8 points, although a new USA Gallup poll has put the gentleman at a statistical dead heat. So I think nationally, people have been looking at this state as being a toss-up. Of late, it's been considered maybe it's going to go into the Republican column, but here on the ground, both men are completely pounding the pavement, going all over the state, literally zigzagging from one end to the other and playing it like they're neck and neck.
And is there an issue or is there a set of issues that has seemingly made the difference to let Corker pull away?
Well, there are a lot of issues that have come to importance when you're talking to the voters. People have certainly brought up the war in Iraq, and Harold Ford certainly talks about that quite a bit. But the fact of the matter is, Harold Ford has run as a moderate and on some very sort of hot button, some issues that people might consider traditionally Republican values issues. Ford has been not easy to pin down as a liberal. He voted for the war in Iraq. He supports bans on gay marriage, extending tax cuts. And so you're in a situation where both candidates have some similar ideas on or similar stances on some key topics, and that leaves the personal. And unfortunately for Ford, there's a lot to work with there. Hmm. He's got a family with a lot of sort of political scandal in the history, even though they're a big political dynasty in Memphis. And you've been hearing a lot of conversation about how much each man prays per day or them talking about their faith constantly. There's a lot of negative ads sort of attacking each other's or specifically Harold Ford's character. And I think that that's what has characterized this race so far.
There was one ad in particular sponsored, by the Republican National Committee attacking Harold Ford that generated a lot of national publicity.
Yeah, this is the famous ad that has a white woman sort of holding her fingers to her ears and telling Harold Ford to call her. And this is sort of a play on the idea of his him being a young man and frequenting Playboy parties. And I think Harold Ford played this off well. While the national media very much talked about it in the context of race, he refused and sort of pointed to it as smut or inappropriate for children to see. And you see a lot of that. Whenever the question of race comes up with Harold Ford, he's not really eager to sort of jump on that train and talk about what being a black candidate is going to mean, even though his run, if he wins, could have some historical consequence. I mean, he'd really be the first popularly elected black candidate to the Senate since Reconstruction.
And Ken Rudin, this is in some respects seen if Barack Obama does decide, the junior senator from Illinois, to make a run for the presidency in 2008, might be looking carefully at the results of tomorrow's election in Tennessee.
Something interesting about this race. I mean, Audie is exactly right. This was a dead even race for the longest time. It seemed like once that ad came out, and then people started talking about race, it seemed like the natural indication for people to vote the way that people vote in Tennessee went back to their old way of voting. In other words, Democrats, look, Al Gore was the last Democrat to win in Tennessee. Democrats usually don't do that well in Senate races in Tennessee. Lamar Alexander, Bill Frist, that's a seat that Bill Frist is giving up. Republicans do very well, and Ford was doing very well. But once the ad came out, and it almost reminded people, in case they forgot, that, by the way, Harold Ford is African-American, it seems like that's when that race seemed to split apart. So, you know, the way that white folks are talking very approvingly of Barack Obama, they'd love to see him run, and, you know, they'd really back him. They said the same thing about Harold Ford for the longest time. It'll be interesting to see what results Obama, given the fact that he's considering a 2008 presidential run, what results, what message he gets out of Tennessee mm-hmm. this year.
Audie Cornish, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks.
Audie Cornish, a reporter for NPR, joining us from our office in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be having more on this conversation after a break, checking in on some critical congressional districts around the area, the suburbs of Philadelphia, and we'll get Ken Rudin's predictions for tomorrow's results. And we'll also go to the opinion page. It's the talk of the nation from NPR News. Let's continue our conversation about this year's elections, tomorrow's election. Still with us here in Studio 3A is NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. His latest Political Junkie column is on our website at npr.org. And joining us now is Joel Rose, a reporter for our member station WHYY in Philadelphia, who's been watching races in his neck of the woods. He joins us now by phone from the suburbs of Philadelphia. Joel, nice of you to be with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Could you tell us where you are exactly?
I am in Marion, Pennsylvania at Jaime's Delicatessen. This was a stop for Republican incumbent Congressman Jim Gerlach yesterday. His Democratic challenger Lois Murphy was here a few weeks ago, and it's one of those races that's just too close to call at the moment.
And there are a bunch of them in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
There are three races that are considered in play. They are all seats that are currently held by Republicans. The strongest challenge maybe is happening a few miles south of here in the 7th District, where retired Vice Admiral Joe Sestak is running ahead, some polls say, of Kurt Weldon, the 10-time Republican incumbent. There's a competitive race up north in Bucks County where Patrick Murphy, a Democratic challenger, is giving incumbent Mike Fitzpatrick a run for his money. But the closest of the three is probably here in the 6th District with Gerlach and Lois Murphy.
And Ken Rudin, of course, Congressman Weldon, in the midst of his campaign, finds out that he's being investigated by the FBI.
Boy, I mean, talk about bad times for the Pennsylvania Republicans. But Kurt Weldon found out that the FBI raided his daughter's office. Apparently, there's some kind of a deal where he tried to steer contracts in her favor.
Allegedly, Ken. Allegedly.
Well, that's part of the investigation. That's why the FBI didn't allegedly raid her office.
No, that's true.
So obviously, that's part of it. And Joel is absolutely right. There are three. Actually, there's another race in Pennsylvania, Don Sherwood race, in the 10th District, and I think at least three seats could be lost, mm-hmm. which is fascinating. If you have three seats in Indiana that'll probably go down, three in Pennsylvania, maybe two in Ohio, you're already almost there to the 15 seats that Democrats need to win the control of the House. So yeah. I don't think it's a question of whether they do it or not. It's just by how much.
Don Sherwood seat a long way from Philadelphia, though. But let's talk about the 8th District, Joel. There you've got a Republican incumbent who's campaigning on local issues, and the Democrat, who's a veteran of Iraq, is focusing on the Republican record in Congress and, of course, the war.
The war is very unpopular with a lot of independents and a lot of Democrats all over the Philly suburbs. I mean, this is the story everywhere. The Republican candidates are running on the local issues. You see, you know, signs that say our congressman or an independent voice. I mean, they're trying to advertise how far apart they are from the president whenever they have voted against him and how far they are from the House leadership. I mean, Jim Gerlach, the incumbent here in the 6th District, his signs are kind of instructive. I think that they're colored blue. They're not red. You know, this is a Republican running with a blue sign. They don't say Republican on them, and you don't see any elephant. You know, you would see no identification with the party whatsoever. It just says Jim Gerlach, our congressman. And so you see the Republicans definitely running away from an unpopular war and a pretty unpopular president.
And statewide, a couple of critical races for the governor's office, of course, and in the United States Senate, Rick Santorum, the Republican incumbent, a very tough race for him.
Yeah, he's on the ropes. A lot of polls have showed the challenger, Bob Casey, running ahead like all year. And even at this late date, I think that the latest poll I saw still showed Casey up by about 8 points. So, this is a very tough year for Rick Santorum.
And Governor Ed Rendell running against somebody who's hailed as a sports hero in the state of Pennsylvania.
But Lynn Swann was a newcomer to politics, and it was just a tough year for him to run against a very popular governor. The economy is not going too badly in Pennsylvania, and Governor Rendell has been able to run on having fulfilled a lot of his campaign promises, and people like him in Pennsylvania. He's very popular statewide, and polls show him running away with the re-election race.
Ken Rudin, any chance for Rick Santorum?
No, Joel is exactly right. Whether it's been 1 point or by 20 points, Santorum has trailed all year. No Republican senator has been defeated in Pennsylvania in 50 years, but Santorum has never caught on, and it looks like a lot more and more Republicans are going for Bob Casey, who's a far less effective campaigner. Santorum is a better campaigner, has more money, but it's not the right year, and the issues are not on his side.
Joel Rose, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Joel Rose reports for our member station in Philadelphia, WHYY, and he joined us by phone today from the suburbs of Philadelphia. And let's see if we get one more caller on the line. And this is Charlie. Charlie calling from Wichita in Kansas.
Hi. I was greatly concerned that in our primary in Kansas, we had basically a statewide turnout of 18%. My question is, for you guys who are experts back there looking at the whole country, has this midterm election, is it going to bring out a higher percentage of voter turnout?
Ken?
Well, it'll certainly bring out a lot of Democrats, and my guess is it'll bring out fewer Republicans. I don't know numerically, there's always more people who vote, but this year, all around the country, the primary turnout was really abysmal. I think it was like 8% in Virginia.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't get a sense that will be reflected tomorrow. I really think that, from at least anecdotally or the people I speak to, Democrats are really pumped up about this. Now, maybe there may be more interest among Republicans in the last couple of days. They seem to be coming back from the fold. But I think the Democrats are really, really anxiously awaiting this. The election can't happen soon enough for them.
Okay. Thank you very much for the program.
Thanks very much for your call, Charlie.
Bye.
And finally, Ken, last week you gave us some tentative predictions. We're going to put you on the spot again. How many seats do the Democrats pick up? And I think that's what we're talking about. Definitely Democratic gains in the House of Representatives.
In the House, they need 15 to make Nancy Pelosi Speaker. I have 20, a net gain of 24th for the Democrats, including one seat in Vermont, which was held by an independent, pickup of 24. They pick up 4 seats in the Senate, but not enough to win control. They need 6 to win control. I see them only winning 4, and they pick up maybe 8 seats, 8 governorships as well. A good year for Democratic governors.
A very tired but nevertheless manic Ken Rudin will be with us on Wednesday, and we can check all those numbers with him as we report on the results of tomorrow's election. Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin and the Political Junkie column at NPR.org.